Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Guitar Nerds Live, the live and dangerous version of the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Jay Cross.
That's me.
And a whole host of fellow Guitar Nerds over on Discord. This is our live episode. We do this once every couple of weeks, and it's for participation by our Patreons. So if you're listening to this and you're not a Patreon and you want to join in with the live episodes, the way to do it is go to patreon.com/guitar nerds, and you can read all about the live episodes and how you can participate. Yeah, this is only the second one we've done, so who knows how this is going to go. I'm sure it'll go well. And what we're going to try and do is bring in some more contributors. A couple of weeks ago, we had some great calls from people in the chat. And this week we want even more than that.
I guess the thing that's important to say is you've come up with a topic, but people can ask literally anything because not really guitar related. But if people want to talk about stuff that's actually guitar related, or if they just want to talk about literally anything else, then we want to hear about that as well.
Yeah, yeah. If anyone needs any like live relationship advice, we'd be more than happy to get stuck in. But yeah, actually, the topic that I've been banding around mainly to annoy Joe Branton. Joe is a stickler for us staying on topic, believe it or not. So I've been teasing him all day that the topic for this podcast was going to be, have you ever seen a ghost, as it's Halloween? He wasn't very happy about that. But what it has done is lead me down a bit of a rabbit hole. I was looking at like Halloween themed guitars, and actually the one that
is in the concept or is in the movie.
I couldn't find any like Halloween H2O starring Jamie Lee Curtis themed guitars, there's none of that. I did find a lot of kind of like Friday the 13th and like Day of the Dead themed guitars, mainly just ESP or LTD guitars, but with basically a sticker over the front that
I think ESP and LTD did a bunch of that sort of stuff. I mean, do you remember all those Metallica guitars that they did that came out around the time of the 30th anniversary of the records? There was a Kill 'Em All one, there was a Ride the Lightning. I think they did most of them and they looked fantastic.
There was also one recently in the last couple of weeks. Yeah, Kirk Hammett, I think, had a Ouija board signature. It was like just, one of his guitars, KH.
That's not really a Metallica anniversary.
No. But back on the kind of Halloween theme, I think it was actually released maybe this week for Halloween. There was some sort of like crazy Ouija board design on there. But looking at all these guitars did lead me down a rabbit hole of I found a guitar made by, hang on, let's find it, Kramer, 1986, the Kramer Triax. And the way that I got to this was I was thinking, okay, what could we do? We could do Halloween guitars, but that's not too much to talk about. Movie theme guitars, yeah, we've kind of done that a few times, the Back to the Future guitars and stuff like that. And I was just like, Star Trek guitar.
I'm 100% in.
So what that actually led to was an article on myrareguitars.com called Beam Me Up Scotty, the 1986 Kramer Triax. And basically what this is a guitar kind of in the shape of one of the Klingon warships.
Okay.
You'll be able to tell me what they're actually called. It's not warship, is it? It's something about a bird or something? Bird of prey, maybe?
Bird? War bird?
Is it not?
I can't remember. Klingon warship.
Yeah, bird, there we go. Someone in the
Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff in the chat, I think, meant to type bird of prey, but has written bird of prep, which I think is a completely different... It's a guitar shaped like a nice pre-packed sandwich.
Really,
yeah, really good, really good. So yeah, the 1986 Kramer Triax, basically this is a guitar that, yeah, is in the shape of a Klingon bird of prey. I mean, it's typical kind of 80s. Yeah. It's like Floyd Rose trim, two humbuckers, but the body shape, yeah, it's kind of got these two big sort of wings on there. Do you know what? I don't want to talk about this for the whole episode, that particular guitar, but what it made me think of was, when was the... This is the actual topic for tonight, by the way. We're actually starting the podcast now. The actual topic is, when was the last time a major guitar manufacturer did something absolutely bonkers? Like a completely different shape to other guitars that they normally do, that isn't like some sort of spin-off of a guitar that they already do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And I guess I'll kick it off with, you know, not wanting to sound like a company shill as always, but what about, in fact, Christian in the chat has just jumped in ahead of me, the Fender Meteora. You know, I got one. Absolutely fantastic. You know, yes, people have said that it is, in terms of the actual, you know, the loadout, it's not too dissimilar from other guitars. The first iteration was essentially a Telecaster with a Tele bridge and Tele pickups, but that that body shape was just completely out of nowhere. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it is definitely something quite different, I would say that. But at the same time, you know, it does... I think it's not... What the kind of thing that I'm thinking of is like that Kramer, like something completely off the map. The Meteora for me is like a kind of Jazzmaster cut down, I guess.
I guess so. I mean, it is kind of like a weird offset. If it come out in like 1967, then we wouldn't be thinking like, oh God, look how mad this is. You know, it would just be, oh, here's another weird... I think it's just for a company like Fender, who have kind of stuck to more traditional shapes and more kind of tried and tested accepted shapes, for something like that to come out in 2017 or 2018, whenever it was it came out, you know, it just kind of took people by surprise.
Yeah, definitely. So someone, Tobin in the chat mentioned Mark Tremonti's prototype PRS Explorer like body shape. Actually, so I just Googled it, and the first picture, I would say it's not Explorer at all. It's just, imagine a normal PRS body, but out of the bottom of it and also out of the top horns, like both flying V's, like a flying V out the bottom of the PRS and also out of the top. Does that make sense? It's pretty bonkers. And I assume that guitar didn't come out. And also the headstock also goes into a flying V.
I mean, I really like the flying V headstock. I've always thought that was a really cool shape. So, you know, I mean, can't find this guitar that you're talking about. If someone could drop it in the chat, that'd be
just put in Tremonti prototype flying, Tremonti prototype 2016, you'll find it. But yeah, so basically, yeah, in fact, it's not even really a flying V. Imagine, you know, the top of the PRS headstock, how it's got the
I've just seen it.
Imagine if they were made out of like plasticine and you just pulled them quite a bit and stretched them out. That's basically what the headstock is. Yeah, I'm into it. I mean, obviously, look, you know, it's never come out, but that would be amazing if they actually released that. I think that would be, yeah, that would be pretty wild along the kind of lines that I'm thinking of. Is there anything else?
The only issue that I've got with that is I've got flashbacks to working in a guitar shop and someone coming in, just walking in with that guitar, just saying like, oh yeah, I just bought this guitar, if you've got a case that fits it. And
just like, yeah, or the other thing, yeah, I've just bought this guitar from you, and yeah, I've taken it home and I've noticed that the top, the really pointy bits have just got like a bit of damage on them. It's like, yeah, because they're only, you know, a millimeter thick, so any, you know, if some sort of gentle wind blew over them, you're going to kind of chip the paint slightly. Yeah, it's pointy guitars, man. It's a real real easy way to ding your guitar. But yeah, also getting a case for that sort of thing, absolute nightmare.
Whilst we're talking about pointy guitars, I just want to deviate from your point to begin with and just talk about the October guitar. This is a guitar that came out, where are we now, 8 years ago, the October Annihilator, which is the Doyle Wolfgang von Frankenstein signature guitar. Doyle Wolfgang von Frankenstein, the guitar player from the Misfits, has always played these like really mad. I think he played BC Rich for a while. He's always played like really banana spiky guitars.
He's always played spunky guitars.
He played really spunky guitars. But yeah, in 2011, October Guitars, which is a company that I don't know if they've done anything else.
I did a bit of research on them because I did a video about like ridiculous metal guitars. And I think I'm almost certain that's the only guitar they've produced, his signature.
Okay, so the October Annihilator is Doyle from the Misfits, fantastic guitar player, absolutely ripped. What a fella! Like he's so tonk, and he play. You'd have to be to play this guitar because it's just bonkers, isn't it? Like no one would risk questioning him over why he's playing it, but it's absolutely fantastic. The thing that's mad about it. It's only £650, $650. Sorry, that is not that doesn't seem like a huge amount of money for a guitar that is such a unique shape like that.
So, as far as I can remember, he actually built his own one, and then the October guitars are basically a copy of his guitar.
Right, okay, he built his guitar. How did how do you build that yourself?
Well, I guess you like carve it out of wood and that, how you make guitars and that.
I guess so. Yeah, I mean, just, I guess, along with being a great guitar player, a huge influence over the last 30 years, being extremely handsome, really, really tonk. He's also great with a jigsaw. I mean, you know, it doesn't surprise me. The fella's got it all.
Or maybe he's really bad. Maybe he just meant to make a Telecaster and it accidentally came out like this.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, he just slipped.
Slipped a few times and went, oh, I've got to finish it now. This is unbelievable.
This is what I was aiming for. What?
Check out October Guitars with a K and you'll see what we're talking about. Yeah, there's two options. There's basically the cheap one, $650, or there's like a USA made one for like $3,500.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I missed that one.
Yeah. I'm assuming that one isn't made by Doyle himself. I assume that there's people in the custom shop that build that. So yeah, any other kind of pointy guitars? I mean, obviously, yeah, we can talk about, Tobin brings a good one up in the chat, actually, the Gibson Modern Double Cut. Do you remember that guitar, Jay?
I mean, that was, if I remember correctly, that looked kind of like a custom 24 or something, right?
I guess it had kind of PRS-y kind of styles to it. But they were kind of offset as well. It was a bit of a weird one. The thing that I liked about that was, yeah, it was something different for Gibson. But I don't think it was, in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't a particularly out there guitar. You know, it's not like the October or anything like that. Or even, you know, the Explorer, the one that I always go back to, you know, Explorers and Flying Vs back in the day. You basically, in the space of a few years, you had a jump from like hollow body guitars, you know, like jazz guitars, to Les Pauls, to then Gibson were like, oh yeah, we're going to make the Explorer and the Flying V.
I mean, well, they were what, 58?
Yeah.
Was the Explorer and the Modern, I think,
yeah,
and the Flying V. I think they all came out in 1958. I wonder if someone who worked for Gibson just kind of snuck those out under the radar without like Ted McCarty finding out about it.
Are they not a Ted McCarty design?
I mean, I assume they were. That was a joke. I wasn't suggesting that someone slipped these guitars out without the CEO noticing.
I'm just having a quick look now. The first Explorers, does it say who designed them? I can't find.
Lim in the chat has just said Ted did design those. If someone said it in the chat, that's I've read it on the internet. That's as good enough proof as I need. So
yeah, that's exactly what I thought. I thought it was a Ted McCarty design again.
I mean, apart from anything, Blim's on first name terms with Ted McCarty. So
yeah, he's just used the old TED, Ted. So I want to open this up to the chat. Is there anything else that we're missing that are like big brand guitars that have come out recently that are completely out there. You know, like, I guess another example I can think of is like Firebird X. Firebird X is completely out there. You know, Gibson going from making like Les Pauls and, you know, all the normal stuff they do. And they kind of started exploring the robot tuners and the USB guitars and the digital guitars and all of that. Even that, Firebird X is pretty out there, you know, with all the fact that you've got connected to like foot pedals and it's got all the effects and stuff in it. Is there anyone else that's done anything like that? Let me know if you want to call in on the chat. Just let me know if there's a guitar that you want to talk about. In the meantime, Jay, is there anything else that you can think of?
Anything else that I can think of? Well, there's been a couple of things that have come up in the chat, but I think maybe we'll let people chime in about that. In terms of
if anyone
weirder like out there stuff, I guess it's difficult, but like maybe Ernie Ball would be an example, because all of the shapes that they've come out with over the last, I mean, maybe even 10 years are completely different from other sort of shapes. You know, even the Valentine is not quite, it's not quite a Les Paul, it's not quite a Telecaster, it's not quite a PRS type shape. The St. Vincent has come up a couple of times in the chat. Obviously, that is completely mad, completely like nothing else on the market at the moment. Even something a bit more conservative, like the Albert Lee. Yes, you can tell that it's kind of based off of a Tele, but if you compare that to other guitars that Ernie Ball have been known for, that Ernie Ball were known for before that model came out. You know, you think of the Majesties, the Cutlasses, and stuff like that. It's completely mad. It doesn't look like anything else. It's fantastic. And as Tobin brings up in the chat, the Omar Rodriguez Lopez Mariposa coming out of absolute left field with something, again, completely bonkers. That doesn't even look anything like his Ibanez ORM that came out, well, kind of came out a couple of years ago. So I think Ernie Ball are a company that are totally pushing the envelope when it comes to new shapes.
Yeah, and actually, I was just thinking about it, because I think the Albert Lee has actually been around longer than you think. Okay. I think it was one of the guitars that... So for a long time, from my experience, you know, when I was at GAC, you know, we were a Music Man dealer, but, you know, it was mainly, you know, you'd custom order whatever a customer wanted. And the shapes, to be honest, were pretty basic. You know, you just got like an Axis or an Axis Super Sport, or, you know, it was all based around like one body type, and like you just chose the pickups and you chose the color. But I think the Albert Lee was also available at that point. I think it was the 3 Strat pickup Albert Lee that was available at that point. Okay. But that was, from what I recall, that was about it. And then they started to get into, you know, doing the John Petrucci stuff. And obviously in the last few years, you know, we've seen the St. Vincent, the Valentine, we've seen, I'm just looking at the list now, the Hunter Hayes, which I'd completely forgotten about. Exactly. The Dustin Kensrue.
That's the new one, the geezer from Fryce.
Yeah, yeah. And actually now, you know,
That guitar looks good. That guitar looks really good, actually.
So pretty much all their guitars now, you know, if you scroll through the site now, at the bottom of the page, there's the Axis collection and the Silhouette collection. And that was they were the two guitars that you could buy back in the day. It was the Axis, which was kind of the Eddie Van Halen style. And then the Silhouette, which was the 2 humbucker single coil, you know, the traditional Music Man shape. And then they had a couple of signatures. I'm sure the Albert Lee 3 single coil was one of them. The Steve Morse they've done for a long time, but that's kind of based on a Silhouette anyway. Steve Lukather they had in the catalog, which is basically a 2 humbucker version of the Silhouette. But everything else now on this page is basically brand new. The Jason Richardson signature, did you know that existed? That is a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 string. In fact, let me get some spec up. So yeah, the Jason Richardson. I'm not even sure who he is. No, sorry, it's a 7 string. It's a 7 string Cutlass model, with like a Burl maple top in black.
I just googled him. He plays in the band Born of Osiris and Chelsea Grin. He was kicked out of Born of Osiris, according to his Wikipedia. I've got no inside info here.
Okay.
He was kicked out of Born of Osiris and then joined the band Chelsea Grin.
Okay.
And
yeah,
then actually after that, in 2013, he joined a band called Jason Richardson and put out a couple of records under that with that band. So
ingenious name. Okay, so someone in the chat, who was it? Derek Rich has just brought a really good one to the table. And actually, this is the last time I remember seeing a major manufacturer bring something out and me going, I do not understand this. I don't know what this is. The Vox Starstream.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much, Derek. This is an absolute banger.
For those that don't know, I mean, how would you even describe the Starstream? Oh,
I'm not looking to put him on the spot here, but if Derek is in a position to, I'd love to have him on and to sort of explain what the Starstream is, because I don't think either of us will be able to do it in any poetic manner.
Derek, if you want to call in, let us know in the chat. In the meantime, I'm just going to get a picture so we can verify your description if you do come on the phone. What I will say is, I believe...
Listen, Vox aren't completely unknown to doing these mad things. I mean, think about the Apache, the Teardrop, you know. They have done kind of mad stuff as well as the more kind of traditional type.
Actually, okay, well, Jeff's actually saying in the chat he doesn't think he could explain it. He's going to leave it to us pros, Eric, to do it. But just quickly, before we actually get into it, I don't think Vox have actually done a traditional guitar, have they, when you think about it? I mean, they did some kind of, like, glued neck double cuts at one point. Do you remember those?
I do remember those, and they were fine.
They were fine. But Vox are known for, you know, doing the Teardrops, and they're known for doing, like, the guitar organ back in the day, which was, before we get into the Starstream, we should talk about the history of Vox guitar organs. It was, the way it worked was when the strings touched the frets, they basically, it made like an electrical connection, and then that triggered the organ sound. Very, very weird.
Sorry, start again. When the strings
Basically, and I'll have to do a bit of reading about how it exactly worked, but it was like sending, basically, when the string touched the frets on the guitar, that basically completed the circuit of an organ synth. Essentially. So where you're kind of touching the string to the fret, that's basically telling the synth inside the guitar what organ sound to play.
So does that mean that the circuit went all the way up and down the fretboard then?
Yes,
so
exactly.
It was basically like you were playing a piano and using the fret markers as keys.
Yeah, essentially the frets were wired into the circuit. And when the string touched it, that completed the circuit. And then that's how it knew what organ sound to play.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Vox are, you know, have not done conventional stuff, particularly, you know, by the looks of things in the chat, people are saying they did traditional copies in the 70s. But yeah, I know them obviously more for the Teardrops and the organs and stuff like that. So the Starstream, how would you describe it? Have you seen the Yamaha Silent guitar? It's basically that, but as an electric guitar with a body in the middle. So it's like the outside bits from the Yamaha Silent guitar, but with an electric guitar in the middle of it. And I believe also, the Vox Arios D system includes drive and reverb as adjustable onboard effects. And it also has, body made of mango wood. Yeah,
plastic. Nice fruity tone.
Yeah, indeed. Lovely, fruity tone. Mango wood for the body, plastic frame, and then also an aluminium frame that joins the two together. And then you've got basically, I'm trying to find some details on, like, there's some sort of guitar modeling in there. First bank, single, voices the humbuckers single coils in usual neck, both, and bridge fashion. Between combines the coils and adds some processing for three stratty in-between flavors that are also hum-cancelling. Humbucker is self-explanatory, while Modern offers neck, single coil, bridge, and bridge humbucker. The piezo is introduced in the 12-string bank, which sounds synthetic but usable. Oh, okay. So this is from the Music Radar review. So there's some opinion here. And there's also two acoustic sounds as well. Plus, the final selection on the switch is the special selection, which gives you synth and bass synth and some like organ tones as well. This thing is bonkers.
Just, yeah. I mean, I don't really understand it.
Two strap buttons as well on the bass, like
why the bass. So you can play it left-handed. I mean they were never gonna make a left-handed version, were they? So maybe they did make it so that you could turn it upside down.
I assume it's because otherwise the guitar wouldn't stand up. Like a lot of the time people would you put like two strap buttons so it stands up. Like I've seen that quite
that's like £12.
That was really conventional on guitars at one point where they were like, oh no, but it's got two strap buttons, so you don't need a guitar stand. Just lean it up against the wall. So yeah, they've done that. Okay, so other guitars that the chat are suggesting, the Warwick Buzzard. Again, I mean, very much so, like that is quite a jump from their regular shapes. You know, if you were a fan of Warwick back in the day, you'd be looking at the streamers, the thumb. Even the thumb is a bit of a weird shape, but then the Buzzard obviously is totally out there. You know, with Warwick stuff, you could take it as far as you want to go. You know, there's the options for light up fret markers. They even, do you remember, Jay, at one point Warwick did like chrome dipped basses?
What?
Yeah, yeah.
Which bit did they dip?
The whole body.
The whole body? What? So they made the body, dipped it in chrome, and then...
And then like put a neck on it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, yeah.
For people who can't see it in the chat, the Warwick... what's this called?
The Buzzard.
Buzzard. Bringing it back to Star Trek, it looks like a Klingon Batleth. Like,
yeah.
It looks like a weapon of mass destruction is what it looks like. It looks absolutely ferocious.
Yeah, totally. And actually, the only time I've ever seen someone steal something from a guitar shop or tried to steal it, someone tried to steal a Warwick Buzzard by putting it down their trousers. It was one of the most surreal moments of my entire life, having to apprehend a man with a Warwick Buzzard down one leg of his trousers, thinking that he was going to be able to walk out of the shop with that down there. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous. But yeah.
You just walk in like kind of with one leg very stiff.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. And I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the podcast before, but yeah, basically heard some like rustling in another room of the shop, and yeah, the guy had basically put the Warwick Buzzard down one leg of his trousers and was thinking that, okay, what I'm going to do is try and walk out of the shop with this down one leg of the trousers. And just had to say, it's obvious what you're up to. You've got a Warwick Buzzard down your trousers.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I was in charge one day when we had a theft, and basically what happened was, it was a really, really, I think I have spoken about this on the podcast before, but it was a really busy Saturday, and someone just walked out, and we were kind of, you know, busy serving someone, and it was another customer sort of caught my attention and went, excuse me, I think someone just stole a guitar.
Yeah.
And we all kind of looked up and went, what? And one of the other fellas who was working, his first week, actually, his first ever Saturday, he went, right, leave it to me. Presumably looking to, you know, try and show that he was worth keeping his job or whatever. He ran after this geezer and he chased him halfway around Brighton. Now, I had this explained to me afterwards. Basically, the guy who was working in the shop was running after this fella. And basically, every time he got to a junction running through the North Lane in Brighton, not sure whether to go left or right, he came across like a bunch of stunned people who just seen a person running away with a guitar and then saw someone with a GAC outfit on that said staff, who pointed them in the right direction. So like, it was like an episode of Grand Theft Auto or something. You're just being pointed in the right direction by members of the public. And anyway, this fella ended up chucking the guitar that he had stolen by wrapping it up in his gym jacket. And he'd left his gym ID in his coat. So like, he was easily, easily apprehended. Yeah. So I ended up having to go to the police station, which was a really horrible experience. And, it ended up, if you remember, Mark, you and me went to a cocktail bar and drank espresso martinis afterwards to like try and, see out the rest of the day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's nothing better than a Valentino's espresso martini to kind of get you over that sort of thing. Derek's just brought another great guitar to our attention, the Burn Scorpion, which is like basically a double cut on the top end where you'd expect the horns to be, but also sort of a double. I don't know. How would you describe that, Jay?
I mean, the Scorpion kind of looks like an SG. We can use proper terminology. We're behind the paywall. Yeah. I think it's fine. It looks like an SG up until about where the bridge pickup is, and then the lower half of it looks like a Scorpion's claw.
Derek has just pointed out that it actually looks like a toilet seat.
It also kind of looks like a toilet seat. Yes. But yeah, basically it looks like the top half is an SG and the bottom half is like a really accentuated SG. And yeah, completely bonkers. I'd be interested to know when the Scorpion was in production, because it's my understanding that Burns guitars originally were made in the UK, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This was probably made in the UK, which is unusual for guitars that look like this, I would have thought.
I mean,
no, kind of stuff that requires more than just taking a block of wood and turning it into a guitar. You know, there's a bit more craftsmanship involved in something like this. Introduced in 1979, and I'm sure that will mean that it was originally made in the UK.
Yeah, yeah, it was. Yeah,
I've also found this fantastic page on the Burns website. Which says the new 2002 Scorpion Gothic has been updated to appeal to heavy metal rock guitarists. So basically, Burns don't appear to have updated this page in their website since at least 2002.
I love it.
So good on them.
That's going to be the question for the next Guitar Nerds Live: is what is the oldest unupdated guitar website you can find? What is the Space Jam website of guitars?
Absolutely. 100% into that. That is fantastic.
I like the Rickenbacker website. I was on there recently. That website has not been updated for a very long time. In so much that they seem to add new stuff, new models and stuff to it when they bring stuff out, like limited editions and that.
Oh, well, they're not but like the delisting pages.
No, because they actually do stay when stuff's discontinued, but it's still up there. But like the actual infrastructure of the website looks like a GeoCities page. And it's like, yeah, it's very, very odd. It's very odd. Okay, is there anything else in the chat? What are people saying? Yeah, so definitely the Burns guitar. I was going to bring up another guitar, which I've now forgot. Oh, yeah. Okay, Joe is bringing up the Music Man Bongo. The thing about the Bongo and talking about toilet seats.
Jeff has just said that it looks like a toilet seat. Now, yeah. I don't know if this is a delayed reaction from the Burns Scorpion, or whether it is in relation to the bongo, which is clearly a photo taken in Joe's house next to a Christmas tree, by the looks of things. Yeah, so the bongo is a really mad bass.
What gets me about the bongo is, firstly, it's been in the catalogue a long time, and you would think that that kind of experimental shape, you know, wouldn't last. But having said that, whenever I watch like bands on TV, you know, when you're watching like, I don't know, Saturday Night Live. Saturday Night Live or like...
You mean like current shows?
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, just like American late night talk shows, the bongo is featured significant amounts of the time. Yeah, you always see them. And yeah, they do a 4, 5 and I believe a 6 string. And yeah, it just always gets me. I think when we were doing them at GAC, when they first came out, we had a few in. And, you know, you put them up there on the wall with like a stingray and stuff, the bongo's never going to be the biggest seller. But what it really amazes me every time I see one on TV, I'm just like, how? How is this still a thing? It's just, yeah, very...
I reckon they've got a great... artist relations department is where it comes from.
Well, yeah, I mean, that may also be true, but yeah, the bongo, how is it still going? Anyway, I think we've done a half an hour. We've done a fair amount of time. Has anyone else got any questions in the chat that they want us to talk about? You don't necessarily need to come on live, but give us some topics to talk about. We'll stick around for 10 or 15 more minutes. If there's something that that you want us to discuss, pop it in the chat now, as it were. Joe and I obviously did the question hole podcast.
Yeah, I only heard about this because I saw it in the group. You didn't even tell me about it.
Well, I thought you were a Patreon. Oh, no, you're only a $1 Patreon sub. You're not a $5.
Be $5 to get that one.
Yeah, yeah. If you're going down question hole, you need to pay $5. You know, it's nothing wrong with that.
What about this podcast? How much do you have to pay for this one?
Only $1. You get this for $1 and above. And in fact, if you're not listening live, you get it for free. You listen to it on the old thing, but you know, you don't get to contribute. So, that was a question from said question hole. One of the questions was, which of the other nerds' guitars would you pick? And Joe and I answered it. Jay, what would you pick out of any of the guitars that me, Matt, or Joe own? What one would you pick if you could only pick one?
If I could only, so I can't include my guitars here. It's got to be
exactly
right. Okay. Well, I probably, if you'd asked me this question maybe a month ago, I probably would have picked Matty Knight's Ocean Pink Les Paul Custom.
And now what you're saying is you want to pick the Yamaha Super Combinator 800 that's sat in my living room.
Is it really that one? The Super Combinator? You haven't restrung it yet, have you?
Did I restring it?
I only play with dead man strings. That's a really important thing for me when it comes to guitars.
It wasn't bought from a dead man. It was bought from a man that was very much alive.
Okay. What would I pick? I mean... Joe's 1969 P bass is up there.
We only actually limited it to 6 string guitars in the previous episode.
Because you were worried that you might have to give up your American Standard P bass, is that why?
Well, no, because I just have your American Standard P bass.
Oh, yeah, I guess so, yeah. Okay, fair enough. My American Standard P bass is fantastic. What would I go for? I mean, I really like your Les Paul Junior. That is great. And I really like Matty's James Valentine. Joe doesn't have any taste, so I wouldn't take anything that he has in terms of guitars. So what else does Matty have?
He's got
a Paisley Strat.
Yeah, which... he's got a Baja Telly. He's got the SG Special. He's got the James Valentine. He's got the Charvel.
Tobin, thank you very much. I tell you what, can I not take a guitar and can I have Matt's RE201 instead? That's probably the same sort of money.
That's true. Yeah, yeah, you could. And he could have your
That's SRE, what I like.
555. Do you know what I picked? Because you didn't listen to the podcast. I ended up picking Joe's ES175, which is fantastic. And he ended up picking my Sunburst Les Paul Junior. So we both ended up with Sunburst Gibsons. Yeah.
I mean, both those guitars are fantastic. Joe's ES175 really is a guitar that's far too nice for a person of his caliber to own. I don't really understand how he passed the test. I assume they still do the ES test when you want to buy one of those. You've got to pass like the Men in Black style test to actually own one.
I think he cheated probably on the test. Yeah. That's the only thing. Derek says, what was the most expensive guitar that you bought that you ultimately thought was worth the price? Any thoughts?
What was the most expensive guitar that you ultimately thought was worth the price? That's difficult because that's actually a very difficult question to answer because basically every guitar that I've ever bought has been bought with some sort of level of staff discount, except for when the early guitars that I bought before I worked at GAC. Because to be honest with you, I was never really that into guitars until I started working in the guitar shop, and it just kind of like crept up on me and very slowly infected me into being this nightmare individual that I am now. But in terms of guitars that I have bought that have been worth the price, I don't know what the answer to that question is. Maybe my P-Bass I bought secondhand. That's what I play the most and I absolutely love it. The Meteora, maybe. The Meteora is just absolutely quality. It's something that I, despite everything that we say on the podcast about just playing guitars and getting on with them, I'm really worried about dinking it. It's the only guitar I've ever really had where I'm like, oh no, I can't risk dinking that.
I saw you play the P-Bass. Oh no, wait, you're talking about the Meteora, sorry.
The P-Bass is a brick house, as it were. I'd throw that off a bridge and it'll work. It's the Meteora is the one that I'm a little bit worried about. That's the thing that I'm scared about. I don't know, what about you? Because you're very similar to me in that you've always been lucky enough to be able to buy stuff with a decent level of staff discount.
You know, the thing for me is like, when you say expensive guitars, that is totally subjective, not only for the person, but also for like the time of in their life. Like when I bought my American P-Bass, it was expensive, but I remember only paying something like 600 quid for it.
I didn't think you paid that, did you?
Maybe not even that. Maybe it was like 500 quid, something around that kind of money. But, you know, at the time of my life, that was very expensive. And ultimately, that has, you know, done however many hundreds of gigs it's done. It's the guitar that, you know, I would save out of a burning building. So that has proved, you know, oh, it was expensive for me at the time. And ultimately, it, you know, that is the one that's been the best. But in terms of like expensive guitars, I don't even know what the most I've ever spent on a guitar is. Probably... have I ever spent more than £1,000 on a guitar? Don't think so.
I have. The Offset Tele was a grand. The Offset Tele was a grand, but I am actually thinking about selling that, so maybe that doesn't really count. So, you know,
it's ultimately not worth it.
No, not at all. Ultimately not worth it. The problem is that, like, I now also own a Mustang, one of the Offset Mustangs, and it's just, I love it. I absolutely love it. It does everything that the Offset Tele does. And it's just, I've got a bit more, I'd make a little bit more money selling the Offset Tele, and my girlfriend got made redundant, so I need a bit of money. So it's something's got to give. So that is probably going to go, but yeah, that's probably the only time I've spent more than a grand, which is obviously very different to Matty and Joe, who have consistently spent a lot of money on guitars. And actually, this sort of leads on to a question that Aaron has asked in the chat, who has said, am I going to spec out a custom shop bass? And I've been thinking about this a lot. And we talked about this maybe even a year ago, me specking up a custom shop base. And kind of the conclusion that I've come to over the last couple of months, since I have been playing bass a lot more, both at home and in a couple of bands that I've just been having band practices with, I absolutely love my American Standard P bass. I absolutely love it. It sounds great. It feels great. The neck is just the right shape. It's all kind of bashed up so I can throw it on the floor, which I always do. And I look cool and it looks cool. And it's kind of yellowed from the person who owned it before me smoking loads. And it looks great. And I absolutely do wish that it was pink, but it's white and it's cool. And I don't think I need another bass. I don't think I need to spend the money and buy another bass because I have so much emotional attachment to the one that I've got. And my kind of theory on this has always been that, like, you can justify buying guitars if you feel like they're going to inspire you to do something different. That's always been the kind of my advice that I've given when working in guitar shops is, look, if you think this is going to inspire you to pick up the guitar more, or pick up the bass more, then you should buy it, because that is the right thing to do if you can afford it, of course. And I'm kind of at a point now where I'm like, I love my American Standard so much. I'm not sure that if I had the custom shop it would inspire me to pick it up anymore, because, you know, how often do you pick up and play bass at home? Not very regularly, let's be honest. And so when I do play it at home, the fact that I'm playing it at all, I think is really cool. So I'm really in two minds about it. I certainly am not in a position to do it right now. I would love one at some point, but the bass that I've got is just wicked. I love it. I don't know how you feel about that, Mark.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, getting a custom shop bass, fantastic. You know, for me, you know, you've got that kind of nitro finish. You've got basically all the spec that you want. You've got, like, yeah, it's basically build a bass of your dreams. Unfortunately, I've kind of found the bass of my dreams already. You know, I had it,
It
was 16 years ago, and it's absolutely perfect for me. And I think it goes back to, you know, what will inevitably be a Guitar Nerds Live topic down the line is the Fender P bass the best, not only the best musical instrument ever designed, but is it the best invention of all time?
Sorry to cut across you there, but I've been thinking about this a lot. And I think that this is purely from my life, other than the internet, the precision bass was the most important invention of the 20th century.
But think about
changed
it.
Rock and roll changed modern music.
Think
at
about
a time
it, though,
when, like, nothing else could.
Put it this way, though. The internet, it's got some problems. I don't know if you've noticed, if you've been online recently, there's some problems. But the P-Bass, no problems. It's literally perfect bit of design.
Well, what you're talking about there is problematic users. You're not talking about the product itself. And I mean, if you want to go down the route of listing some problematic P-Bass players, I'm sure we could come up with some. But let's
Joe Branton.
Well, I mean, you know, on a good day, he's a problematic P-Bass player. That's a bloody good day. I mean, we've had a couple of reactions to this in the chat. Jeff says the P bass is amazingly boring and I can't understand the fascination. How do you block people from a chat? Because
deleted.
That is just absolutely ridiculous. Blim is saying the jazz is better than the P. That's ridiculous. The jazz is fine. The P bass is as I've just said, the second greatest invention of the 20th century. Tobin and Derek are putting in other options there, the Les Paul and the Telecaster. I mean, they're both great. The thing is that the P-Bass had such a monumental shift in what was modern music. I mean, yes, there were other instruments that did a similar sort of thing, but nothing that did it as concisely as the precision bass. And, you know, we wouldn't have... we wouldn't have had the shift in modern rock and roll at the start of the 50s that we did without the P-Bass. I just think it's so important.
Joe Branton is saying the jazz is definitely more versatile. To me, that is like saying you've got two machines. One makes different flavors of soup. The other just makes pepperoni pizzas. Which one do you choose? I'm going for the pepperoni pizza every time. Simple, isn't it? Simple analogy, but sums it up perfectly. With that, I think we should draw this to a close. There is one last question from the chat. It's actually from Joe Branton. And the question is, have you ever seen a ghost, Jay Cross?
Wow, Joe, I didn't realize that you're into such supernatural spookiness. This is a sexy question. I've never seen a ghost. No, if we're talking seriously for a moment, I like the idea of it. But no, I've never seen a ghost. And as much as I would like to believe that the idea of it's true, I don't think it's possible. I don't understand how it could be metaphysically possible.
Go on.
No, I was just going to say, this question came up on the, which is, I'm sure, how you came up with this topic. This came up on the Reply All podcast earlier this week. And one of the hosts on there stated, like, if ghosts were real, basically what would happen with them is they would probably just be, they wouldn't realize that they were ghosts and they would just continue on with their routine. So, you know, they would just forever live in, like, you know, they would just forever live out doing whatever it was that they were doing. And that's why you see ghosts in, like, people see ghosts in pubs, or people see ghosts in, like, farms, or like operating machinery, because they're just continuing to do what they were really doing. And I think what that basically says is that if ever anything horrifying happens to one of the four of us, we will continue to sit down and do the podcast and just not understand why our questions aren't being answered whilst our mates are, you know, talking about guitars.
You can't get away from us even in death. And I think that is a good way to end this podcast. Thanks for listening this week. We'll be doing another live episode in a couple of weeks. Thanks for all the contributions in the chat. Next time, get on the phone line. We want you to hear your beautiful voices on the live podcast. Hook up a microphone to your computer. Hook up some headphones. Come with some questions and feel free to talk on the topic that we're talking about. Or if you want to talk about something completely different, i.e. have you seen a ghost, you're more than welcome to come on. We will be back in a couple of weeks with another Guitar Nerds Live. And that's it. Thanks a lot, Jay. Thanks for joining us.
Please don't ever talk to me like that again.
Talk to you like what?
Just like treating me like an equal.
Oh, don't okay, like it. Fine. Yeah. Good.
We're past right, that. Past that.
Thanks very much. Keep listening. And if you're listening to this and you're not a Patreon subscriber, but you want to join in, either calling into the show or just listening to the show live and contributing to the chat.
Podcast is only available for patrons, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Join patreon.com/guitar nerds. Even the minimum contribution of $1 a month will get you access to the Discord server, which allows you to listen to the live chat, the live podcast. And if you want to, if you're feeling brave, you can call in and ask your question live on the podcast, patreon.com.
We're definitely not as mean to you as we are to each other. So, like, don't worry about that.
Oh, yeah, we'll be totally nice. We'll let you say your piece, basically, and say whatever you want. You can, you know, come in and tell Joe Brown that his mustache is stupid. That's absolutely fine by me. You do whatever you want. Anyway, patreon.com/guitar nerds. Little as $1 a month, you can join in on the live episodes. And, we'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.
Peace, gang.